On today's program, celebrating social change artist Tommy Sands and the spirit of his music. I'm Richard Brendan, bringing love to life. Welcome to today's program. A legend in Ireland and known throughout the world for his songs and messages of peace, Tommy Sands has been described by respected U.S. magazine Sing Out as the most powerful songwriter in Ireland, if not the rest of the world. The description sells him short. He's a rare combination of singer, songwriter, storyteller, author, and social activist, captivating audiences with the same musical skill and charm that has earned him the respect of fellow musician Pete Seeger, Nobel laureate author Seamus Heaney, and host of politicians around the world. However, it's not Tommy's masterful songwriting or his talent as a musician that makes him so influential. He is indeed an Irish bard. In alternating ways, both traditional and contemporary, he brings with his songs the stories of Ireland, communicating that tradition while encompassing the dreams of those around the world. His songs bring history, encouragement, enlightened ideas, and a feeling of connectedness and the joy of living. Born in Northern Ireland, Tommy's first steps were amidst chaos. Very early on, it became clear that music was a vehicle for harmony. And as part of the acclaimed Sands family, one of the most important traditional groups in the early years of the folk revival, Tommy traveled everywhere from Carnegie Hall to Moscow's Olympic Stadium in an effort to add beauty to the world and to point out where it still needs improvement. In later years, Tommy continues to walk the troubled roads, bringing a template of possibility to areas of political and social unrest with his words and music. He has become a bard of peace. Tommy joins us from his home in Northern Ireland. Tommy, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much.
I'm so excited that you agreed to come on. This show is really all about what we call social change artists, and especially the singer-songwriters who are using their music, their passion, if you will, for social justice. And your whole life has been about that.
Well, I suppose when you live in a place like this, you tend, and during times of trouble and I suppose a war, if you like, you're always trying to find ways of contributing some little thing to make things a little bit better for people.
Sure.
And for our children as well. So I suppose a lot of my songs, I started out writing songs just about people, but when simple folk songs like Pretty Fair Maids in the Month of May, or even June. But when it became July and August in my growing up, and Pretty Fair Maids were amongst those been maimed and killed, I felt it a duty to write songs about that.
Absolutely. I'd like to talk about your past because I found it fascinating. You were born on the family farm in Northern Ireland, and your parents came from families of singers, musicians, and storytellers. What was that like growing up in that culture?
Well, yeah, I suppose growing up, I didn't realize there was anything else in the world except music. Mm-hmm. My very earliest memories of growing up in the world of music was, you know, been sent to bed early when I was very young, and neighboring men would come in with fiddles under their arms and black bottles squeaking in their inside pockets and stories in their lips. And so there was music from the very earliest times. And whenever I was big enough to stay up, I knew a lot of the songs because it leaked underneath the bedroom door, accompanied by the flicker of an oil lamp. I knew most of the songs and the tunes as well, you know, from my parents and from the old people who come in.
Mm-hmm. What I found interesting is early on you attended college to study theology and philosophy. It wasn't music right then, was it?
Always there, but not in any kind of I never saw it as a way of life or a way of living or a way to earn a living. Mm-hmm. It is just a little bit like breathing or talking. A song was just a little bit of an extension to a conversation,
yeah.
Maybe with more tonations.
Mm-hmm.
But it is only afterwards that I started to sing as a for a living.
Yeah, yeah. And your passion for theology and philosophy, where did that come from as a young man?
Well, I grew up in a family as well where there were priests and people who had gone as missionaries. I had three uncles priests. One went to the Philippines. He lived in a place called Singalong. And he used to send home pictures of beautiful sunshine and banana trees and beautiful girls and all sorts of things. And he was a great man. I liked him very much. Mm-hmm. I had another uncle who went to Africa. He died in Nigeria.
Mm-hmm.
He's buried there, and people say that they can have cures going to his grave, the local people in Nigeria.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had another uncle who was in China, and he was the only Irish man to meet Mao Zedong.
Mm.
He was captured by Mao Zedong and held as to ransom. And it's a beautiful story about his life, actually, a book by a man called William E. Barrett. He wrote also the Lilies of the Field. It became the Lilies of the Field film.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was very much influenced by these people. And I suppose a young lad growing up in Ireland at the time, you know, you have the ambition to try to do the very best thing that you can with your life. And at that time, it seemed, for me, a priest would be a good idea.
Yeah.
So I went to the seminary, and I enjoyed it very much. But after a while, I realized that it wasn't for me. And I decided to walk home, about 100 miles of a walk. And on the way, I was wondering, what will I be doing? And I looked over the hedges, and I saw the men working at the hay. And I saw different people doing different things. And I had no idea what I was going to do. And then just as I arrived near my hometown, I met this taxi car heading back up the road to Dublin. And it was my family. And my brother, I turned down the window, and he said, he didn't ask me, where are you going or anything. He just said, we're going to do a concert, and we've got your guitar in the back. Would you like to come? I said, yes. And that really determined it in a strange way, you know, after walking through the proverbial desert.
Exactly. And the Sands family became one of the Ireland's most influential folk groups in the 60s and 70s. How about that?
That's right. We traveled a lot, and we played in the United States, and it was in Carnegie Hall back in 1972.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a great experience. And then we went, the troubles were on here, and we wanted to come back home.
Mm-hmm.
And but we played a lot here, and we played as well. We went to Eastern Europe quite a bit in those days, too.
Mm.
Before the wall came down, actually, there was a very very interesting arts program that the government in East Germany put a lot of energy and money into the arts.
Mm-hmm.
And so they invited people like ourselves because they wanted a little bit of a history of Ireland, and they felt that songs was a good way to learn about the history of Ireland.
Oh, that's wonderful. My guest today is Tommy Sands, singer, songwriter, and peace activist in Ireland. Tommy, by the way, I believe you just got back from a tour?
Yes. I'm always getting back from tour. Where I was recently, Richard. Let me see. I was over in Prague, and I was over in the United States as well, and I was over in the Middle East, in Israel, and in Palestine, mm-hmm. Gaza and Ramallah,
mm-hmm.
Tel Aviv and Jerusalem as well.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm just about to start a tour in Ireland.
That's what I thought.
The 32 counties of Ireland.
So that's coming up next.
In a month and a day. And as well, I'll be doing some of the, starting off with the prisons. I'm doing the three prisoners. So I'll be playing to all the prisoners in Northern Ireland, and then I'll head across the border into the Republic of Ireland, and I'll do the rest of the counties.
So how do you keep your energy up with such a schedule that you keep?
Well, I do have a good rest in between, you know, and I live just where the mountains sweep down to the sea. Literally, the Mourne Mountains just touch the sea where I live, and I feel great energy here, and very good neighbors, and so I have a good rest in between.
That's wonderful.
I enjoy that too.
Yes. I want to ask you about one of your songs. It's probably your classic song. And when I learned about the story was so powerful. And of course, I'm talking about There Were Roses. And we'll be playing that in our break. But can you tell our listeners the story behind that song, what that's about?
Well, we lived in, you know, on a small farm. We were surrounded by other small farms, and people came from both sides of the political divide here, religious divide, whatever you want to call it. And because my parents played music during the winter time, the neighbors would come in and to take part in the singing sessions. And of course, we didn't have any electricity, and we made our own entertainment, and no one had any electricity, so there's no televisions or anything like that. So it is a way of passing the evening. But one of the things I noticed was that watching my earliest memories was watching all these toes tapping to the same rhythm, the rhythm of my father's fiddle and my mother's accordion. And I realized that music was something that could somehow, well, all the toes tapping to the same rhythm regardless of the religion or politics. And I realized that music was something that could somehow connect up all the secret and sacred things inside us without our knowing and without our understanding sometimes. And I remember one evening in the summertime when the roses were out along the hedges on the Ryan Road where we lived, and the neighbors were in, someone said, no matter how close the troubles get to us here, it won't change us because we're friends and we know each other. And we could hear explosions going off just a few miles away and lambeg drums being played just a few fields away. And I didn't realize it, but 1 year later, many things would have changed. And two of the people who came to our house, one was a Protestant, one was a Catholic, and one was actually shot, and then the other one shot in retaliation for the first one being shot, even though they came from the same friendship and neighborhood. So I thought that kind of summed up war. And the song, you know, has been translated into many languages nowadays, and indeed I played it in the Middle East and all the places too. But I wrote the song really just for a small community on the Ryan Road, because we had stopped talking. We didn't know how to talk anymore. And we were suspicious of each other. And I find sometimes that music can break down those barriers. You know, words on their own can reach to the ends of the earth, but sometimes words in the wings of a song can reach deeper inside to express hurt or pain or even hope.
Oh, I so agree with you, Tommy. We're finding that more and more, that music, because it's so universal.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
And the story about the story behind this song, if you will, reminded me of a story. Two of my favorite heroes, who both have been on this show, I'm a big fan of yours now, by the way, was John O'Donohue, who tragically died several years ago at a young age. The poet and philosopher. And then Betty Williams.
Man.
Yes, and Betty Williams, who I have so admired her work in peacemaking. And I remember.
Betty, yeah, I haven't seen Betty for a while. She's a great woman.
Oh, yeah. Well, I remember when she told me the story of how she got involved. She was just a housewife doing her life, and then these children got killed right outside her home. And after that happening one too many times, she just got so fed up, she just started banging on doors and saying, we've got to do something about this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's right. Herself and Mairead Corrigan.
Yes.
Mairead McGuire.
Exactly. Exactly. So it's interesting that you grew up in Northern Ireland with a Catholic family, but it sounds like you had the good fortune of being in a family that didn't get caught up in the violence of all of that.
Well, you know, we in small community, we lived quietly, but of course the troubles came to us all right, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I suppose we had the good fortune not to have to join up with either side. If you're living in the city, and sometimes not much choice.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. When you travel, Tommy, do you see a commonality amongst all the people? The tour you just got back from, you were in many different cultures and countries, many of them hotbeds for violence and conflict. What are you seeing? What are you hearing as a heart cry from the people who are coming to your concerts around the world?
You know, you take any room full of people and ask them, do they want war or peace?
Mm-hmm.
There's only one answer.
Mm-hmm.
They want justice and equality and parity of esteem between people.
Mm-hmm.
No one wants war. Very often, wars are fought for all sorts of dubious reasons.
Mm-hmm.
And I find people coming to the concerts come to find a kind of a warmth, because sometimes people are sitting watching TV on their own.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at television too much, you think that the whole world is killing each other.
Mm-hmm.
Because television and newspapers as well, you know, the old lead if it bleeds story. And at home, I notice very much that whenever the talks start storming.
Mm-hmm.
In the parliament, all the TV stations were, you know, showing it.
Mm-hmm.
But then after a while, they needed a new story.
Mm-hmm.
So they interviewed everyone who disagreed with the talks. And everybody was in despair, because that was all that they were hearing. And I think the nature of television is TV can't deal very well with peace, because if you put a calm sea in a blue sky on a television screen and hold that shot for more than 5 seconds, people will be getting their remote controls looking for storms, because
yes,
television is about moving pictures. And it doesn't work otherwise. So, of course, television stations and cameras are looking for action, looking for anything that moves, smoke, fire, all that sort of thing. So people, I think, like to be reassured and reassure each other.
Mm-hmm.
That we're not bad people at all.
Mm-hmm.
We want to have a way, and a friendly way of living with each other and being good to each other.
Mm-hmm.
And I find that people hopefully walk out feeling a little bit better than they did when they came in. And I can feel it as a musician. Like on stage, you can feel every emotion.
Mm-hmm.
And every energy, and you also feel better yourself too.
Absolutely. My guest today is legendary singer and songwriter and peace activist Tommy Sands. As we go to break, we'll be playing his classic song, There Were Roses. I'm Richard Rendon. We'll be right back after this song.
My song for you this evening, it's not to make you sad, not for adding to the sorrows of this troubled northern land. But lately I've been thinking, and it just won't leave my mind. Tell you of two friends, one time who were both good friends of mine. Alan Bell from Bena, he lived just across the fields. A great man for the music and the dancing and the reels. O'Malley came from South Armagh to court young Alice Fair. And we'd often meet on the Ryan Road, and the laughter filled the air. There were roses, roses, there were roses, and the tears of the people ran together. Though Alan, he was Protestant, and John was Catholic born, it never made a difference, for the friendship it was strong. And sometimes in the evening, when we heard the sound of drums, we said it won't divide us, we will always be the one. For the ground our fathers ploughed in, the soil it is the same, and the places where we say our prayers have just got different names. We talked about the friends who died, and we hope there'd be no more. It's little then we realized the tragedy in store. There were roses, roses, there were roses, and the tears of the people ran together. It was on a Sunday morning when the awful news came round. Another killing has been done just outside Newry town. We knew that Alan danced up there, we knew he liked the band. But when we heard that he was dead, we just could not understand. We gathered at the graveside on that cold and rainy day, and the minister, he closed his eyes and he prayed for no revenge. And all the ones who knew him from along the Ryan Road, they bowed their heads and said a prayer for the resting of his soul. There were roses, roses, there were roses, and the tears of the people ran together. Well, fear had filled the countryside, there was fear in every home, when the car of death came prowling round the lonely Ryan Road. A Catholic would be killed tonight to even up the score. Oh Christ, it's young O'Malley that they've taken from the door. Alan was my friend, he cried, he begged them with his fear. But centuries of hatred, of ears that cannot hear, an eye for an eye was all that filled their mind, and another eye for another eye till everyone is blind. There were roses, roses, there were roses, and the tears of the people ran together. So my song for you this evening, it's not to make you sad, nor for adding to the sorrows of this troubled northern land. But lately I've been thinking, and it just won't leave my mind. to tell you of two friends one time who were both good friends of mine. I don't know where the moral is or where the song should end, but I wonder just how many wars are fought between good friends. And those that give the orders are not the ones to die. It's Mel and O'Malley and the likes of you and I. There were roses, roses, there were roses, and the tears of the people ran together. There were roses, roses, there were roses.
Welcome back to the program. I'm Richard Brendan. My guest today is Tommy Sands, peace activist, singer, songwriter in Northern Ireland. Tommy, I'd like to have you talk about your relationship with Pete Seeger. When did you meet him?
I met Pete about maybe about 30 years ago. I was in the United States, and some of my songs had come over to United States with all their singers. And Pete had got to hear some of them, and I had the opportunity to meet him back then, and we've been very good friends since. He's a wonderful man, and I've been very much inspired by Pete. And I often think, traveling around the world, no matter where I go, people know songs from Pete Seeger. They may not know who the president is in America, but they know Pete Seeger. And he has made an amazing impact with his life and with his songs. Where Have All the Flowers Gone, for example, which is used by Germany in the Winter Olympics for skiing, the figure skaters, used that song. It's just one example. The songs are known all over the place, and they're all very positive songs, very good songs, and we've been very good friends since.
The lyrics of your songs, I was looking up quite a few of them, are very, very powerful. What is your creative process in composing a song?
Well, usually if there's something in my mind that I wanted to say, I find I can say it better through music and through a song. So very often I would find what the song was going to be about. Then I would use that line, for example, even a simple song like Don't Call Me Early in the Morning, is one of my songs about relaxing sometimes, because we work and worry and worry our way through life very often. But Don't Call Me Early in the Morning, so that would be the first line of the chorus. And because it would be a little bit like a headline in a newspaper, you could refer back to it after each verse. And also you could ask the audience to, if they agreed with it, they would amen it by singing with you. And the melody would come from just saying that word, or saying that expression or sentence, don't call me early in the morning. Don't call me early in the morning. Call me what you want to, but leave me alone. That's just an example. And it's just, you exaggerate the tone of the voice when you say it. You exaggerate the tone, and it becomes a song. A little bit like a cartoonist would kind of exaggerate the lines.
Yes.
And so that would be the kind of, usually the process, Richard, although it changes, you know, from time to time. And if you're writing a song for a large group of people, for example, I remember I've been in Moscow singing for the earthquake disaster in Armenia, and there were a lot of Armenian people there. So I knew that no one would understand anything except Armenia. So I, I sang that, I repeated that four times, and they were all singing with me.
Hmm.
And so it depends a little bit on what I'm writing the song for.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You have two amazing young musicians traveling with you now on tour that I'm sure you're very proud of. I'm speaking of your son and daughter.
Son and daughter. I am indeed.
So they're carrying on the legacy.
Yes, indeed. Maya and Finan, they like it very much, and they it's come fairly natural to them.
Mm-hmm.
And they started to play. Well, they grew up also with music around, so they knew it, but they didn't play until with me until they were about 16 or 17 or more.
Yes.
And Maya had been playing the fiddle, and then she stopped it, and I got an invitation to go to India, and she said, "Oh, I'd love to go to India." And I said, "Well, you have to play music." So she says, "Well, I play the fiddle." I says, "Well, you haven't played it for 6 years." So suddenly I heard the fiddle been practiced in her bedroom, and the door was left open to show me how good she still was. So she came to India with me,
yeah.
And she never stopped since. And Finan, my son, he did a little bit of work guitaring and guitar tech with Sinead O'Connor and traveled around a little bit. And then he came on the road with me too, so it was great.
Yes, and by the way, your website is tommysands.com, and it's a beautiful website. There's music people can listen to, pictures of your family and you, and the tour dates that are coming up. It's amazing. Your kids also represent the younger generation in Ireland, and specifically Northern Ireland. Where are they at in terms of sharing your heart for activism?
Well, there would be, I suppose, they always came with me.
Mm-hmm.
And if they weren't playing, they knew what was going on, you know, and they'd be very much tuned into it and tuned into seeing the value of music. And I suppose when it's a great privilege to be able to stand on a stage and perform to people, and with it goes a certain, I suppose, responsibility of trying to do something positive. And they would be tuned into that a little bit too.
Yeah. By the way, besides your music, you're also very passionate about education in peacemaking. And you do a lot of lectures and programs for children as well in universities. Can you talk about that?
Well, I find it, I love working with children because they're very open.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, the best audiences, the adult audiences, have to become like children before they can really get into the music in a way, you know. But yeah, on this tour now, I'm starting off in some prisons, young offenders, and then I'm doing some schools and universities as well. Sometimes in the prisons, I get the young prisoners to write songs about their own life.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes to get them to sing a song to the judge, and as a kind of a plea in their defense. Because sometimes they can say things through songs that they normally wouldn't say through normal words. And I'm also very much inspired by the young people.
Mm-hmm.
In Ireland today, there's a great energy, even though, you know, there's not much money around the place, but people are they're very anxious to make some sort of an impact. Musically, there's never been as many young people playing music, playing folk music, traditional music, in the history of the island. I don't think there's ever been as many playing. There was I also do a radio program, you know, and I go around the countryside, yes, taping old people and young people as well.
Yes.
And the music is wonderful all around the countryside here.
And tell me, what's the reason for the heightened interest of music in the young people now?
Well, I think in Ireland, people like music very much anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's a starting point. Mm-hmm. You know, when Gabriel Cambrensis, he was an historian who came with the Normans in the 12th century to Ireland. And he hadn't many good things to say about the Irish because he was kind of embedded, if you like, mm-hmm, with the Norman army. Mm-hmm. So he was a propagandist. He wasn't going to say anything good about them. But one thing he had to admit, and that was that there was an extraordinary ability to play beautiful music. That goes back to the 12th century.
Mm-hmm.
So there is somehow within the people and within the atmosphere, music grows very readily and easily.
Mm-hmm.
And I think young people here would be listening to and influenced by, you know, all sorts of modern music as well.
Mm-hmm.
But if they want to, there's more feeling in the music that you can hear, mm-hmm, with your ear that you can hear, I mean, without loud amplification and that sort of thing.
Yes. I'm speaking with Tommy Sands, legendary singer, songwriter, and peace activist. Tommy, earlier in our interview, you were talking about you just came back from, I guess, the first part of your tour, and you're getting ready to head to really all of the counties in Northern Ireland. I'm wondering, what is it like now, the state of peace in Northern Ireland? What's happening right now?
Well, I'm actually playing in all the counties in North and South,
okay,
Richard.
Okay.
The six counties of Northern Ireland and the 26 of the South. In Northern Ireland, we have a peace process,
mm-hmm,
that is quite remarkable, actually.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there was a time when people used to say that Northern Ireland had the problem for every solution. That no matter what was suggested, it didn't seem to work.
Mm.
But I think we have learned a lot. We've learned the hard way.
Mm-hmm.
And we have learned how to look at things maybe more in a lateral way. We've learned to distinguish between democracy, which we thought we had, and majoritarianism, which in fact we did have, because you had a majority, as happened to be unionist with Britain, Protestant people, who were ruling over a minority who were Catholic and who want union with the rest of Ireland. And in a divided society where a majority are ruling over a minority rather than ruling for them, it's a little bit like three wolves and two sheep having a democratic vote as to what they should have for supper. So it's only when everyone is involved in the decision-making process that things really work anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Because otherwise people don't vote.
Mm-hmm.
If they feel that their vote is not going to make any difference to their own lives, they don't vote.
Mm-hmm.
So I think with the Good Friday Agreement, we have a power-sharing parliament now, mm-hmm, assembly.
Mm-hmm.
And this is very important because people feel that they're represented. And in fact, we had a few wonderful sessions there for the release of my most recent record, it's called Arising from the Troubles.
Yes.
I went to the parliament and I invited all the political parties to come together,
mm-hmm,
and they all did, and I asked them all to contribute with a song or a poem,
mm-hmm,
or a story or, mm-hmm, something,
mm-hmm,
and we had a wonderful night. And these are people who would have been shooting each other a few years ago.
Yes.
Actually singing together. And it was really wonderful. So there are, I mean, pieces like a little baby will slip and stumble many times before it learns to walk. But mm-hmm. one day it will dance. And
yeah.
there are people, you know, who don't agree with the agreement, if you like,
mm-hmm.
and dissidents on both sides.
Mm-hmm.
But I think no one wants to go back to violence.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's very evident.
Do you believe, after all these years in your lifetime, that there will be true peace?
Well, I think if we have a situation where people are not killing each other,
mm-hmm.
I mean, it's healthy to be arguing about things and having differences because we're all individuals and we have different views and we have a right to all to many of these views. I think that there will be a sense of conflict and energy that way, but that's fine, providing that it's done, mm-hmm. you know, without hurting each other.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully, we are coming closer to that all the time.
How do you accept invitations that are given to you? Because I would imagine you could be very busy all around the world. I read about one in 2010 where you accepted the invitation of Palestinian Israeli activists in East Jerusalem. And that had to be a powerful experience, I would imagine.
Oh, it was. It was. Because I really wanted to... Well, I was asked to... There was a flotilla going... ships going to Israel, and in fact, Mairead McGuire was, who is a friend of Betty Williams,
yes.
the other woman
yes.
in the Peace Women. She'd asked me to go on the ship, and as it happened, I had another arrangement. I was going to both Israel and Palestine. I wanted to bring some politicians with me from the peace process here
mm-hmm.
to more or less to talk about it's not impossible, you know, don't give up.
Mm-hmm.
So I went there and it was, I wanted to meet up with peace groups in both places. And in Israel, there's a great danger of Israeli people being dehumanized by the rest of the world
mm-hmm.
because of what is happening.
Mm-hmm.
But there are so many people over there who do not agree with a lot of what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got groups like Families of the Bereaved, Combatants for Peace.
Mm-hmm.
There's a group in Hebron, Breaking the Silence. These people are wonderful people, and they're kind of isolated because of the boycott on Israel. They're isolated within Israel and isolated within the rest of the world. There was one, I wrote a song about it too, called What's Going On in Jerusalem. I met a woman, I was staying in her house in Jerusalem, and I saw a picture on the wall of herself and a little boy. And I said, "Who's the little boy?" And she said, "That's Mika." She told me her story. She was born in the United States. Her father worked in one of the newspapers, but he was from a left-wing viewpoint, and McCarthyism was kind of leaking through. He lost his job in his house, and she said, "Let's go home to Israel."
Hmm.
There were Jewish people that never had been there.
Mm-hmm.
They went there, and she herself was pregnant, and she knew she had 18 years to help make the country a peaceful place that her son wouldn't have to join the army.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, 18 years later, he did,
yes.
As all young men must join the army, and young women too.
Mm-hmm.
And he went to Hebron,
mm-hmm.
and what was happening there, he couldn't deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
And he joined this group, breaking the silence. And he, when I was speaking to her, he was gone. He had to leave, and he went back to the United States. Mm-hmm. But then the last time I was there, he was back. And so there's a lot of great things going on between both Israelis and Palestinians. Mm-hmm. And that's hopeful.
That is hopeful.
So like, I wanted to go around more or less telling the people in Gaza that there's a lot of people in Israel who do not want to kill you, and telling the people in Israel that there's a lot of people in Palestine who don't want to kill you. And I think the role of the bard in ancient Ireland was that the bard had the coat of many colours. He had the colour of all the tribes, but under the thumb of none. But he would bring around positive messages between people who very often are deliberately kept apart from knowing the truth about each other.
My guest today, and it's a joy to have him on this program, is Tommy Sands, singer, songwriter, and peace activist, who, and he already alluded to this story in 2002 when he persuaded the members of the Northern Ireland Assembly to record a special Christmas musical party for his radio show. Many of the members sang with him on stage, and David Irvine, the leader of the Loyalists, remarked, "Tommy Sands is the only man without a private army who can intimidate me." It's a joy to have him on this program. We'll have one more segment. You're listening to The Richard Brendan Show. We'll be right back after a short break.
They wouldn't hear your music and they pulled your paintings down. They wouldn't read your writing and they banned you from the town. But they couldn't stop you dreaming and the victory you've won. For you sow the seeds of freedom in your daughters and your sons. In your daughters and your sons. In your daughters and your sons. You sow the seeds of freedom in your daughters and your sons. Your weary smile, it proudly hides the chain marks on your hands, where you bravely strive to realize the rights of every man. And though your body's bent and low, a victory you've won, for you sow the seeds of justice in your daughters and your sons. In your daughters and your sons. In your daughters and your sons. You sow the seeds of justice in your daughters and your sons. I don't know your religion, but one day I heard you pray for a world where everyone can work and children they can play. And though you never got your share of the fruits that you have won, you sow the seeds of equality in your daughters and your sons. In your daughters and your sons. In your daughters and your sons. You sow the seeds of equality in your daughters and your sons. They taunted you in Belfast and they tortured you in Spain. And in that Warsaw ghetto where they tied you up in chains. In Vietnam and Chile when they came with tanks and guns. It's there you sow the seeds of peace in your daughters and your sons. In your daughters and your sons. In your daughters and your sons. It's there you sow the seeds of peace in your daughters and your sons. Now your music's playing and the writing's on the wall, and all the dreams you painted can be seen by one and all. And now you've got them thinking and the future's just begun, for you sow the seeds of freedom in your daughters and your sons. In your daughters and your sons. In your daughters and your sons. You sow the seeds of freedom in your daughters and your sons. In your daughters and your sons. In your daughters and your sons. You sow the seeds of freedom in your daughters and your sons.
Welcome back to the program. My guest is Tommy Sands. Tommy, we were talking about your experience in Israel, and before that, of course, the ongoing experience because you lived there in Ireland, in Northern Ireland. I'm wondering, in all the travels that you've done, you and even your family, is there a memory or an experience that you recall more than others, an experience where you were most moved by either the situation or the people, perhaps the concert? Does anything come to mind?
Well, you know, Richard, there's been some wonderful times. I think I remember being up in Reno in a young offender's prison there.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I was... a lot of the people were very despairing, and but I kind of taught them to write songs about their life, as I mentioned earlier on.
Yeah.
And there was one young girl. You know, I was walking around and seeing how they were getting on at the writing, and there was this very tough lad, and he wasn't writing at all. He was tough on the outside. I suppose most people who are tough on the outside are often fragile on the inside, and they grow a shell around themselves, a hard shell. But I was surprised to see that he's actually crying. And I said, "Why are you crying?" He says, "I just don't know how to start."
Hmm.
And I says, "Well, why do you not know how to start, or how is that?" He says, "Oh, no," he said, "I don't know how to start." And I said, "Well, that's a great first line," because he was singing to the judge, actually.
Yes.
Writing a song for the judge. And I said, "Why don't you know how to start?" And he says, "I just feel so out of place in here." I said, "That's a great second line." And he wrote a wonderful song, because sometimes when you're writing a song, you don't have to edit anything. Mm-hmm. It's the truth that comes out of you.
Mm-hmm.
But there was an all young woman called Danielle.
Mm-hmm.
Who wrote a song, and in the song she said things that no one connected to the prison or the counselors had known anything about her. And her song, well, they all sang to, I tried to get a melody that they all could sing to, and that was difficult, because a lot of them were from different national backgrounds and so on, but I thought maybe they might know an Elvis Presley song. They never heard of Elvis Presley, all of them. The only song they all knew in common was "Twinkle Twinkle Little Star."
Oh.
And they all had learned that, but their cultural life they ended very young. And of course, "Twinkle Twinkle Little Star," it's a very wonderful air. "Kumbaya" is the same air.
Mm-hmm.
It's a wonderful air. So this little girl, Danielle, her song was, "I was born in Stamford on the Bay. Seems so long now, so far away. There were pretty flowers all around. They grew up, but I grew down. Will you hear me? Will you hear me? When I was only very young, my dad left home before my life begun. He only wanted push and drugs. My mama cried and she gave me hugs. Will you hear me? Will you hear me? My youngest brother, he got killed right beside our favorite hill. They came and took my dad away and locked him up in Reno jail. Will you hear me? Will you hear me? When I was 8, we moved to Dayton. That's where I learned that word called hatin'. When I was 10, I ran away. My man grandma cried all day. I sold my body to buy my food. I was beaten, bullied, and abused. Will you help to turn the page? I'm a girl of 17 years of age." And it was so moving. And it was a life that showed that she had no chance. And in fact, she's now out of the prison. And she's got her own family now, and mm-hmm. many of them write to me, and that's great.
That is beautiful, actually. Tell me, I want to ask you this question. I haven't had the privilege of meeting you yet. I hope I get that joy one day, because I imagine not only through your words and your music, but your presence, you bring a lot of hope and inspiration into young people's lives also, like the one you just talked about. My question is, with the work that you do, who or what inspires you?
Well, you know, so many things, Richard. I tuned into your program when I heard it during the interview, and some of what I heard there was inspiring, and your program's inspiring. I'm just influenced by everybody around me all the time. And, you know, wonderful people like Pete, people that I meet all the time as well, because I think very often, you know, when we're speaking to people of the same way of thinking, you might think we're preaching to the choir or that, but no, we all need each other all the time to inspire each other. And so just what's happening around all the time inspires me, how people deal with what may well look like a small problem, but it can sometimes be a very, very big problem for them. So all these things inspire me very much, and it gives me energy to get out on the road with my guitar. And because when you go out, you don't go out to teach, you go out to learn.
Tommy Sands, thank you so much for sharing your time with us today, and thank you so much for sharing your gifts with the world.
Thank you very much, Richard.
And Tommy's website again is tommysands.com, and that's today's program. Our website is richardbrendan.org. For associate producer Jerry Curtis, engineer Joe Bainline, and production assistant Pamela Jay, I'm Richard Brendan. We're bringing love to life, one broadcast at a time.